Welcome to Halloween 2021 here.
It just got so spooky in here.
BCMC. Oh, what a Halloween we've had. We're coming to an end once again. Sadly, spooky season comes to an end, but it'll be back next year.
When did we all start calling it spooky season?
I don't know, but it's a thing that we all say now, huh?
It is a thing we all say.
Yeah. Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Fauci. Buongiorno.
Oh, is that my Simpsons Halloween name?
Yeah.
Anthony Fauci's so scary.
Oh.
He's trying to make us get the jab.
Oh, no. Stop trying to poke me in the arm.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. What a Halloween we've had. Well, let's look back at the fun we've had. Talked about our favorite jump scares, talked about 80s horror movies. Me and Kill Bill talked about... what did we talk about? Horror Hall of Fame. Anthony, what's your favorite jump scare?
Probably when Meryl Streep shows up in The Devil Wears Prada for the first time.
All right. Thank you.
Jumped out of my skin. No.
Yeah.
Actually, we were just talking about this off air.
Yeah.
Muppet's Haunted Mansion had quite a jump scare.
Yes.
John Stamos had a jump scare.
And it scared Jen quite a bit.
Did it?
Yeah.
I can see like little kids being really scared of that. It gave me shades of like Pee-wee's Big Adventure jump scare.
You're right. It wasn't that bad, but it was certainly unexpected, which is the key to a jump scare.
Did you guys mention that on your episode?
No.
Large Marge?
No, we did not.
That's a jump scare for the
ages.
That
is a great jump scare.
Yeah.
And one for children.
Yes.
Yeah, I Janine said that her boy was scared by it.
Her boy? Aw.
Yeah.
Poor baby boy.
Yeah, well,
it was scary.
You can't trust
But what's weird about it is he turned into a scary Muppet.
Yeah, yeah. But I also liked that he was sitting at a booth that looked like a dune buggy.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it was a little thing like that. Well, today we are going to talk about something that, in fact, I, believe it or not, have very little experience with. We are going to talk about Goosebumps.
Bum, 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 bum.
Better nanner now. Book one from July 1992.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Dead House.
That it seems so old now.
There are
July 1992. God, that was the Bush administration.
Right. There are apparently, of course, this is by Robert Lauren Stein.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
R.L. Stein, who originally published as Jovial Bob
Stein. Yeah, I just read that. Jovial Bob Stein.
Because he did like comedy things. All right. I went on a deep R.L. Stein YouTube rabbit hole, and he is a unreliable narrator because he's full of dad jokes that he repeats. He's full of the same anecdotes that he repeats. And he lies. He lies. He says he doesn't know how many Goosebumps books there are. I don't believe that. He also, the story of how he started doing Fear Street, he sometimes tells that story as how he started doing Goosebumps, but it's a lie.
What's the story?
He says that he was writing these funny kids books, whatever, as Jovial Bob, and he was having lunch with some publisher from Scholastic, and she said, oh, I'm having trouble with this author who's trying to write a teen horror thing. I think you'd be good at that. And that is the real story of how he started writing Fear Street, which came out before Goosebumps,
which was for teens,
right?
Not little kids.
And it's more complex. Not it's still not adult novels,
right?
But people die in Fear Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit scarier.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes he tells that exact story as the story of how Goosebumps was created.
That's weird.
You can find footage of him telling the same story twice. One saying it's Goosebumps. Now I'm assuming that it's Fear Street because Fear Street came out first, so it makes sense to me that Fear Street came out first, that it would be the true story of Fear Street.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Do you realize
he also, like, on the whenever I'd seen him on Goosebumps as a kid,
yeah,
he always had kind of like this kind of like spooky demeanor,
right?
Which I think that's all put on, right?
Oh no, he's just a mensch. He's just like,
and then immortalized on film by Jack Black. Yeah, in a weird turn.
He's just a sweet old man who has dad jokes
like Stephen King
and lives on like the Upper West Side in a beautiful apartment. And Fear Street came out a year earlier, or 2 years earlier, But it's not like he ended Fear Street and started Goosebumps. He was doing both at once. In his heyday of really pumping them out, he was doing 2 books a month. 12 Goosebumps a year and 12 Fear Streets a year.
Well,
that's incredible.
Yeah. His creative process is incredible. I know we've talked about this before. I know he talks about it on his masterclass.
I rewatched some of it today.
He comes up with the title first.
Right.
And then builds a story around the title.
Right, right. And he even says on his masterclass, I know that no one else does that.
Yeah, normally the title is like the last thing you do.
He has this thing, I don't know, he has this really interesting, you know, I actually wrote something down that I was like, you know what? I like this philosophy. What did he say? Why don't you just write for fun? Why do you have to write from your heart? I've never written from my heart. And he always goes, why? He also talks about like, what's writer's block? That's not a thing. Like, you don't have to have writer's block.
Well, because he only deals in pastiche, so he's never thinking of anything original.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Which is fine. I mean, I'm not judging that at all, but of course you don't have writer's block when it's just like, oh, let me just play with this trope, then I'll play with this trope, then I'll play with this trope.
At some point, when he's doing 12 books a year, or 24 books a year, he'd be like, fuck, now what?
Well, in fairness, a lot of them are sequels to each other.
Well, there's not that many. There's Slappy sequels. There's the Mask. The Mask.
Haunted Mask sequels.
And then there's like the Monsterland series.
Yeah, but then there's like Monster Blood 1, 2, 3. There were a lot of.
He does it more in Fear Street. There's the cheerleader like saga inside of Fear Street.
He never had a ghostwriter for reals, or is he lying about that?
If he has, we don't know it.
Because
it's not come out.
I wouldn't be shocked if we were to find out one day that it's like a team.
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't be shocked, but I just hearing the man and his masterclass, I do, and look, these books are young reader books. I mean, the Goosebumps series is for 7 to 12-year-olds. They're basically novellas. I mean, the book we read for today was 120 pages.
Yeah, on the Kindle version, it was only like 85 or something. Right. Crazy short.
Right, right. So, you know, they're basically padded short stories.
Well, I remember, you just made me think of this core memory. When I was a kid and I was really into Goosebumps, you weren't, I was.
Right, this really is the first Goosebumps book I've ever read.
Wow, I read a lot. I was really into them as a kid. You swiftly made fun of me for it
For no reason.
This kid reading books.
For no reason other than to be mean.
But I had a big collection of them, and you just reminded me, our grandmother used to read them with me. Like, I would read it, and then I'd give it to her, and then she'd read it, and we'd talk about it.
It's adorable.
And it was adorable, but I haven't thought about this in years, but I marveled at like how quickly she read them. And I was like, I just gave you that book 2 days ago. You read the whole thing, but now as an adult, I'm like, of course
she probably read it on the shitter.
It's a pamphlet. Like, of course she read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she probably skimmed it at best. But she did actually like skim it at least, because we used to actually talk about the parts and the characters and stuff. Yeah, it was cute.
I slowed myself down because I didn't want to finish it so far before our recording. I actually stopped for a few days and then finished it yesterday.
The pace is really fast. And it's so formulaic. Every chapter ends with a cliffhanger.
I know. Well, I have a bunch of good things to say about it. Because look, we could make fun of it and we will. But it's easy to do that. And I want to look at why people like it.
No, yeah, I definitely still have a huge soft spot for Goosebumps, and I think that Goosebumps as a franchise has endured. I mean, they were making Goosebumps movies as recently as like 2 years ago.
Right. R.L. Stine's having a little bit of a moment right now. He's got a new Disney Plus show called Just Beyond, which is kind of Twilight Zone-y. And there was the Fear Street trilogy, which I think nobody knew what it was going to be, and it ended up being really good. It got really good reviews.
Yeah.
And even though it was not a straight adaptation of any of the books, it pulled from a bunch of the Fear Street books. And people like I listened to a podcast called Creep. What are they called? Teen Creeps, which are these two adult female comedians talking about his work and also like, you know, Holly Black and some of those people. And they were saying like, it's somehow super faithful without actually adapting any of the particular stories.
Like, it's just the tone and the aesthetic and everything. The tone,
but also like every subplot is pulled from a book.
Okay.
So it ends up being, and I, you know, it ends up being more faithful than like the Goosebumps movie, which was really just like R.L. Stine himself as a character.
Right. But that was fun.
I liked it. I saw the first one.
What's funny is I think you like Fear Street and the Goosebumps movies more than you liked the adaptation of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, right?
Right.
And that was your favorite book as a kid.
You're right. Well, I've never read any Fear Streets. And as we know, I'm just started reading the Goosebumps saga.
The saga.
I actually don't know if I'll ever read another Goosebumps, but I might read Fear Street.
This was actually the first time I've ever read this one. I had it. I owned it as a kid. I never got around to reading it.
Well, all right. Before we move on to content analysis,
yeah.
Can you tell me about your history with Goosebumps? Goosebumps? Can you tell me about your history with Goosebumps?
Yeah. I mean, so they came out and were really popular in the mid-90s, which was, I was at the exact right age for them.
Right. Well, 92, right? How old would you be?
92, I was six.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the time I was like 8 or 9, it was in its heyday.
So you got into it a couple years into it.
Yeah.
Which apparently everyone did. It was a failure for like a year or two.
Yeah, it was.
And then it exploded.
But they were like, I was the group, my age group specifically was the one that was like targeted most heavily.
Because right, of course.
It was, we were the demographic. And it was just like super popular. And for me, I always like, as a kid, I was like scared of like scary stuff. Mm-hmm. But I saw it as like an entryway into being brave and like reading scary things. Yeah. And I remember it notably was one of the first books that I ever read on my own, not for school. It was the It Came from the Basement one. That was the first one I read. Yeah. And I really, really loved it. And then I remember just buying, collecting them. It was like having a collection too.
Well, they
kids
were
used to talk about like, oh, do you have this Goosebumps? And they were numbered. And I remember I had them all in order, number order on my shelf.
The original series had 62 books.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they've been,
there were a bunch of spinoffs that I had.
There was like a Choose Your Own Adventure version.
There was one that's called, I had it and I was thinking about it today. It's called Give Yourself Goosebumps. And I never realized like how masturbatory that sounds until now.
You have to say it like give yourself goosebumps. No, I've got here, the original 62 books were from 92 to 97. Then Tales to Give You Goosebumps were 6 books. That was from 94 to 97.
Those were short story collections.
Oh, I see. Give Yourself Goosebumps is
Choose Your Own Adventure.
You're right. That's 95 to 2000.
Mm-hmm. There was overlap.
Goosebumps Presents, that's 19 books. I don't know what those are.
I don't know what those are.
Goosebumps Horrorland, there's 25 of those books.
Never read them.
Goosebumps Most Wanted, 14 books. I don't know what those are.
I don't. Horrorland I've seen, but I think I just aged out of it by the time those came out.
Of course, there was a Goosebumps TV show, which I was more familiar with.
Which started as a special, remember?
Well, the pilot aired as a Halloween special.
It was the Haunted Mask.
Haunted Mask, which he would be the Rod Serling for.
Yes. I remember I had it on video, on VHS, just that one episode.
Right.
And, man, I loved it. I still remember the girl's name was Carly Beth, and it felt very Canadian. And I remember just the kids being like, Carly Beth, what's wrong?
Right, right. Now, there is an episode based on Welcome to Dead House, which I was not able to watch in preparation. But I know that they cut stuff out. I'm wondering if the show actually, because it seems like there's no cap on what he's writing. Like, this book has a giant amphitheater in it and, you know, hundreds of extras.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering when they did it for the TV show, they could not have done that.
I don't remember the show being very high budget.
Also, apparently in the episode of Welcome to Dead House, the sun makes you poof into dust. Whereas in this book, sunlight makes your like skin melt off.
I want to talk about that last scene. Because I
don't understand what it means.
No, well, sort of. But also, as somebody who read a lot of Goosebumps books as a kid, I remember them being very tame. And I was reading this one thinking, like, this seems really scary for a Goosebumps book. And then I was reading up on it and discovered that R.L. Stine himself said that he thinks that this first one was too scary. And then he toned it down for the ones that came after.
Well, that's
and that just, last scene is scary.
Yeah. Well, it's not. It's brutal.
It's very descriptive and very gory. And also the dog dies.
Yes. That blew my mind. I actually have a little list I made of things that surprised me.
Yeah, the dog dying was a big surprise
to
me.
That was a big surprise. I was also surprised by the, like, from what I know just from the covers and the titles, there's a humor and there's no humor in this one. This one's sort of a straight story. There's no puns. There's no Night of the Living Monster.
It feels very much like the first of a series.
Yeah.
Where he hasn't worked out the kinks yet.
Yeah. And We should say of the 62 original books, Tim Jacobus illustrated or made the cover illustration for 60 out of that 62. And I really like the cover for this. It's
I'll never forget that image.
Right. It's just a low angle of a house with a creepy tree. There's a sort of menacing person in the window. It's all shadowy. I mean, it's a perfect, like, imagination of, like, a haunted house.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to start a series like this, like, a haunted house. It's very, very simple narrative.
Yeah, and it's very, I mean, he does a pretty good job with atmosphere. I mean, he talks about how the name of the town is Dark Falls, and even though it's July, it's always dark, and there's shadows everywhere. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of nods to Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
It felt like this whole thing was kind of like a nod to House of Usher a little bit.
Oh, wow. I did not sense that.
Especially with the house with the...
Way less incest.
Yeah. But like the house having the windows that look like eyes.
See, when I thought of Amityville when I read that.
That makes sense,
because the Amityville house has the sort of bay windows that look like eyes.
Yeah. I mean, that's a trope.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, look. He's really good at what he does. There's not a word out of place. He doesn't waste a word. He doesn't waste a sentence. It's all so, so tight. I mean, you can look at it and go, oh, it's so simple, but it's so, it's not so simple that you don't feel an atmosphere, that you don't get a sense of what things look like. Mm-hmm. He's very, very good at saying what he means. And painting it for you.
He's a master of word economy.
Yeah. Even his paragraphs are so short. It's crazy.
They're like journalistic paragraphs.
Yeah. I want to talk about the tense of the book, because I actually, you are much more. You have a master's degree in English, and I do not. So I couldn't tell if this was past tense or present tense. Because even if it is past tense, it's super, super tight. It mm-hmm. all feels super like it's happening right there. It's not very past tense.
Yeah. It is past tense, but he writes it in a way where it's like moment to moment.
Yes.
So that it feels like it's rolling out almost as present
right.
tense.
Right. That's why I had a hard time. I was like,
which really... is good for children, and it's suspenseful.
Right. Right. Oh, yes, we should tell the story of the book.
Yeah.
So the main protagonist is Amanda, mm-hmm. and she has a little brother, Josh, who's a little brother who's always making trouble. And she's got, the little brother's a dummy. She's sensible, and mom and dad are kind of clueless, perfect like kid book
stuff. In all the Goosebumps books, the parents are either clueless or like don't take the kids seriously.
Of course. Which is the greatest fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a dog named Petey.
Cute little white terrier.
Yes. So they a great uncle that they didn't know about dies.
Which is so...
And is like, here's a house.
Funny. It's so funny that that was a joke in
Muppets.
In Muppets, yeah, I'll have to mention. Yeah. And we also, we just watched what's it called? Flintstones.
Yeah.
Meet the Rockula and Frankenstone. And it's not like an uncle or anything, but there is the thing of like you have to spend the night in a haunted house. Like it's just so...
I rewatched a little bit of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. And in that, there's a scene where she's like, to keep her show on the air, she needs like $50,000. And then like immediately a lawyer's like, oh, your great aunt died. And she looked at $50,000. And then Elvira looks at the camera and she's like, whoa, what perfect timing.
Where did that come from, do you think? Where do you think that originated, that trope? Of like a long lost or an aunt or an uncle you didn't know left you some haunted manor.
I feel like it's got to be something weird and European.
Like from a gothic.
Yeah, it's got to be something about like bloodlines and not knowing your bloodline is somehow bad or whatever. I'm more interested. I just watched House on Haunted Hill with Vincent Price.
Okay.
And I'm interested in where the stay in a house for a night and win money or win something, because that's also in Muppet Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, I was curious about that too.
Where does that come from? Like the dare you have to stay and if you could last the night.
Yeah, I don't know. It's got to come from somewhere.
It's all It's all interesting when you think about like where all this stuff comes from.
And I don't know if it's just horror or if I'm just thinking of it now because we're talking about horror, but it does feel like horror has a lot of just like repeated like plot setups and, you know.
Right, right, right.
Like across the whole genre.
Right.
Like a lot of motifs that are just very similar.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I'm thinking about science fiction. I mean, science fiction does have repeated tropes, but I think not as...
I mean, every genre does, but not as... I feel like there's a loyalty or like a... what's it called? Fidelity in horror, where it's like you don't turn away from those tropes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you honor them.
Well, we were downstairs, we were talking about the Halloween series, and they play with the idea of Michael Myers' childhood home as being a haunted house. Like even the beginning of the original Halloween, Laurie's dad, who's like a real estate agent or whatever, is like, drop something off at the Myers house. Yeah. And the kid's like, you can't go near the Myers
place.
No, you can't go.
Apparently that kid is a character in Halloween Kills.
Let's not even get into it.
Mike has been rooting for the demise of Halloween Kills.
It's just...
I told him before, I texted him that it's got very poor reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and he texted back, that makes me so happy.
Listen, no offense to anyone involved, but
you just want to take them down a peg.
I can't get into this again. I just... We've talked about this many times on the podcast. I just don't understand this.
It's a lot of misplaced reverence.
Yeah. Anyway, the fuck were we talking about? Oh, haunted houses. Anyway, yeah, they get it. So this was another thing that surprised me. The socioeconomic status being referred to, the parents are like kind of like not doing great and they're happy to get this house. And dad is all about it because now he can quit his job and be a writer.
Yeah.
And I was really struck by that because so often, you know, socioeconomic status and the fears and stresses that come from that are something that, you know, families try to keep from their children and you wouldn't normally see in a kid's book.
Right.
And it's there. Yeah. You know, like they want this house to work because they kind of need it to work.
It also, not to jump to the ending, but it adds an extra layer of like deviousness to the plot because basically, they were lured into that house because they were poor. And it makes you think that like all those people who are lured into that house are like people who are looking for relief economically or financially.
Right, right.
It's got some adultish themes that are adultish for a Goosebumps
book. Which I found really surprising.
Because it's not in the other ones.
Oh, okay, okay. Because, you know,
he said if he were to rewrite it again, he would have made it lighter. So he like sort of regrets it,
which is stupid because he's like, if I could write it now, I'd make it worse.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're writing for 8 year olds,
I'd put more ventriloquist puppets in it.
Hey, those are good. I like Slappy. The Slappy books.
Oh, Slappy is his Mickey Mouse. He is all about the Slappy. You know, because R.L. Stein, again, I've seen him say multiple times in interviews, you know, Goosebumps doesn't deal with divorce. It deals with monsters. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not real scary things to kids. But the idea of mom and dad not having enough money is a real economic fear.
And that's a kind of weird thing to say as a horror writer, because I feel like all horror is standing in for real life tragedy.
Well,
right?
He's one of these guys that's like, there's no subtext.
There's no artistry here whatsoever. He's like, don't look behind that curtain. There's nothing there.
He's like, there's no morals. He's like, I resent that they say for children's books you have to teach them something. Why can't they just be entertained? He's got this very interesting ideology of like...
I mean, I guess it worked for him.
No, I mean, it certainly did.
I never thought of that. That is true. Like the books don't have morals.
No, I mean,
and they very often end with a scary ending.
Right. I mean, they're ideological in the sense that all things are ideological. Like usually having good characteristics work for the characters. Being brave, caring about other people tends to
they're virtuous. Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, that itself is ideological,
but it's just interesting though, like that he says, like
it's not didactic.
These aren't, yeah, no, they're not. But which is good, and you know, because I guess the kids know when they're being spoken down to or condescended to. But it's interesting that he said, like these aren't about real; these are about monsters, not really scary things. When I guess, like we know based on, like I guess the fact that we've talked about it so much, like a lot of like monsters are really just symbols for I'm thinking of right. like It Follows and The Shining, and it's right. like very often like those monsters are like stand-ins for trauma and well, abuse.
Well,
and,
you know, he says that he's not being he's not using metaphor at all. But like
maybe he's just talking shit because he lies all the time.
or you know, I'm a you know, as somebody who's like a kind of post-structuralist thinker, I always feel like whether or not you think you're putting things into a story, they're in there.
Right.
And you know, when I was reading this, I was like, just the idea of moving to a new neighborhood and leaving your friends behind and having a house is something a real kid would be terrified of.
Right. And kids are scared to make new friends.
Right. So, and that's exactly what this
right.
is.
Right.
That's exactly what
this is. And it turns out these kids are dead.
Whoa.
Are they ghosts or zombies?
That's a great, great question.
I found myself confused.
Sometimes they're both. Sometimes they're one or the other.
And also kind of vampires because they can't be in the light.
And also their intentions kind of go from like, I want to kill you to, this is just how it goes.
Yeah.
You know what? Talk about that last scene. In the last scene, to jump ahead.
So what happens is, I guess we should say, it turns out that everybody in the town is dead.
Yeah.
He's undead, they say. And then
from, by the way, more adult theming, from an industrial accident,
yes,
from a plastic factory.
Yes, a chemical, they say a yellow cloud
yeah.
settled over the town and killed everybody.
Killed everybody.
They're all dead, but somehow they're still alive. They have, I was confused, because they have headstones, but they're all walking around.
Right, and you don't see them come out of the ground.
And also I kept asking, like,
melt.
What? They melt in the sunlight, but what do they look like? Do they look dead?
I think they've described as just looking kind of pale.
So then I was like, well, this is kind of Children of the Corn-ish, and right. then I was thinking it's also kind of like The Lottery-ish. Because it's like, oh, well, every year we need a new family
right.
to
you're,
sacrifice.
Right, you're this year's sacrifice.
Because why? I don't, why do they need that? To keep going?
I think they need, they kept saying we need fresh blood.
To be undead?
Yeah, I guess. You need to bring new people into the town. Mm-hmm. Again, economic. You could read that as a, it's like Flint, Michigan in the
90s. Man.
I mean, you can read it that way. You know, because they were like everyone.
It's like an economically depressed little town.
They say like
the factory.
Everyone
shut
worked
down.
At the factory. They're like, yeah, we all worked at the factory.
There's some real deep stuff happening here.
I know.
This is about the death of rural America.
It fucking is. But anyway, getting to the last scene, there's a big like tree.
It's unclear.
Yeah.
There's a tree that's making a big shade.
Right.
And they're gonna kill all the ghosts. By pushing down the tree.
Sure. And then all the ghosts are like screaming. Wait, and melting.
I have it. I highlighted it because it's actually, it's the way it was written. I was like, whoa, this is really weird for, this is really weirdly like scary. Hold on.
It's visceral.
It is. So I grabbed Josh and we both stood in amazement and disbelief as bright sunlight poured into the amphitheater. They're in like a big theater outside for some reason.
It's not quite perfectly.
The cries went up instantly. Horrified cries. Angry cries. Frantic cries. The cries became howls.
Okay,
howls,
good night. Have a good night's sleep.
Howls of pain, of agony.
Yikes.
The people in the amphitheater, the living dead caught in the golden light, began scrambling over one another, screeching, pulling, climbing, pushing, trying to claw their way to shade, but it was too late. Their skin began to drop off their bones.
Wow.
And as I stared open mouth, they crumbled to powder and dissolved to the ground. Their clothes disintegrated along with them. And then listen to this.
Wait, the Karen line?
Wait, hold on. The witch line?
Karen, her friend Karen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That line really
Karen.
Spooked me.
The painful cries continued to ring out as the bodies fell apart. The skin melted away. The dry bones collapsed. I saw Karen Somerset staggering across the floor. I saw her hair fall to the ground in a heap, revealing the dark skull underneath. She cast a glance up at me, a longing look, a look of regret. And then her eyeballs rolled out of their sockets, and she opened her toothless mouth and cried, "Thank you, Amanda. Thank you," and collapsed.
What?
It is a singularly terrifying image.
And her saying thank you.
So would they want it to be released?
To be dead. Oh, but I guess, I mean, not Mr. Dawes.
And then two paragraphs later, when we look back, they all disappeared and they're all gone.
Yeah, they're
it's
gone.
Just so quick.
It is. That is, I mean, to hear you read it out loud, you're right with the economy of it. It is really snappy.
Yeah.
It's really, it is really good.
Fast. Yeah.
She said, thank you. it's funny, like, you think maybe that's supposed to give it a happier ending, but it makes it more sad to me.
Well, also because she's toothless and her eyeballs fell out of her head before she said it.
I know. It's pretty fucking
dark. I mean, these kids would be traumatized for life.
I know. You're not getting over this.
Remember that time we moved into a dead town with all those zombies?
Yeah. Well, you know, you think zombies because he more than once uses the term living dead.
Yeah. And they seem to be made of flesh.
Yes.
Right? So they are, what's the word I'm trying to think of? They're not
corporeal?
Like...
corporeal?
Yeah, yeah. They are. So they're like made of something.
Yeah, they're not ghosts that are translucent.
Right. It's weird.
They can play baseball.
Yeah, they do.
Right. And it's got to be direct sunlight or... A really bright flashlight.
Yeah, that was weird.
Because if it's cloudy, they're good.
Yeah. I kept wondering, and maybe I shouldn't be poking holes here, but like, how is it just so shady everywhere? Like, is it just there are that many trees?
I imagined, or was it the clouds over.
Is it like those chemical clouds were there?
That's what I imagined.
Okay. It's not quite clear.
No, but I did have a sense of... there was an image in my mind as I read it.
Well, there's definitely an atmosphere here, for sure.
You know, even in like, if you read like the first two pages, in the first two pages, you get the situation, all the characters, the tone. Like, he gives it to you all like, you know, there's no missteps in the structure of the thing.
No, which is why I said I wonder if it's not just him, because it feels so incredibly polished. It's hard to believe it's that one guy wrote this in 2 weeks, unless he's just really that good, which he could be.
Maybe.
I just pulled up the third paragraph. It's so dark, I thought, studying from the street. The whole house was covered in darkness, as if it were hiding in the shadows of the gnarled old trees that bent over it. I mean, that's really good atmosphere, really right. Early on.
And again, every word is in perfect place. Yeah, nothing out of place. Exactly. Nothing superfluous.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a good kid's book because it teaches you how to read. You know, like every little detail is a clue. And the character, the protagonist is constantly asking rhetorical questions. So if you're being read to by a parent, the kid could go, can answer it.
Right.
Like, you could say, oh, it's dumb. Obviously, we see where it's going. But it allows the kid who's reading it to make a guess and then feel confident that they were right.
Right, which is an important part of like reading comprehension. It's really, making predictions and then, yeah.
It's really good confidence in that way. The name of the place is Dark Falls. You know, he doesn't think that the kid is too dumb to get it. He wants the kid to get it. He wants him to understand that the name probably does mean something, that the place is scary. So he's helping the reader to build their reading confidence.
Right. Which is why writers of children's books, I think, are so talented and why children's literature is so interesting to me, because it's kind of got a dual purpose.
Yeah.
Because it's like telling a story and entertaining a kid, but also like trying to shape kids into being lifelong readers.
Right. Even expand their vocabulary. Like, he'll throw in a word like amphitheater.
Yeah.
Which is like, now you're going to learn what an amphitheater is.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and then like in the sentence that I just read, gnarled old trees and things like that. What I was thinking was, as a kid, I loved these books. Now they feel so like kind of cliche. And I think it's because kids don't know cliches yet.
Right.
So a kid, it's probably the first time a kid experiences like a jump scare. And he puts jump scares into the books.
You fucking bet he does.
He ends a chapter with, and then a hand was on my shoulder. Right. And then the chapter ends. Yeah.
And then he cheats it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it was my brother. Yeah.
Like, it'll chapter be like, and then he came in and shot me in the face with a gun. And then the next chapter will begin, I thought it was a gun, but it was actually a feather, and he was tickling my face. Anyway, and you're like, ah. It's like, he means for you to, or for the teacher, or for you to stop reading at a chapter, and then be... That's another thing that I found interesting, that I was surprised by, which is, you know, Goosebumps, right? It's telling you the affect that you're supposed to be feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's less about monsters and vampires and ghosts and more about suspense. The whole thing is really suspense. Literally every scene is, here's a normal situation. Let's make it weird. Let's raise some tension. And then let's freak you out. And it's all about tension. It's right. all, you know, it's more, more about narrative tension than it is about scares.
Mm-hmm. And then there's some twists and reveals that yeah. for a kid are like mind blowing.
Whoa!
Like when the realtor, Mr. Dawes, comes to save them yeah. and then they see his headstone and then they're like, you've been dead the whole time.
Whoa!
And then the chapter ends.
I know.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Do you think Mr. Dawes was a real estate man before he died, or he got into real estate after he was a ghost?
Well, at the end, you know, anybody could get a real estate license at any time, even when they've left this earthly plane.
Clearly, Dawes was a big part of this plan, right? Because he was the one, he was like the Allison Williams in Get Out. Like, Dawes has to get you in, right?
Yes. And then I was, so at the end, she's like, that guy looked like Mr. Dawes. Like, is Mr. Dawes back? And then I was like, is Mr. Dawes like the devil?
I found the end to make no sense.
Oh, no, of course it didn't. It was like a new family's coming in, and then she's like, let me not save them.
Right. They're driving away. They kill all the living dead or whatever the hell they are. Mom and dad now believe them because they were part of it. They're driving back to their old home. I'm glad we didn't sell it.
Yeah. Let's go back to that old dump.
The dog is dead, which we can't undo, mm-hmm. Which is pretty crazy. And then she's like struck with this thing and she runs back to the house and just stares at it. And I'm like, oh, she's dead. They're dead.
That's what I thought too.
They're ghosts because they can't leave.
Right.
But then she sees a new family pull up because that's the way it works. And then she says, like, I thought I saw Mr. Dawes, but that can't be.
Right. And it was weird. And then she says to the kid, like, I used to live in your house.
Right, it also feels like you're a ghost, right? Because right. all the ghosts say that to her. Yeah. I used to live in your house.
I wonder if that was the original plan, and then they were like, oh, that's too dark for a kid's book.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah, because that line, that's what their kids say to them right. in the beginning of the right. book is, we used to live in your
and
house.
And they killed Dawes, so why should it continue happening?
But then how would they have died? There's no...
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. What's interesting is as I was reading, I was like, huh, there's a lot of like American Horror Story in this first season.
Well, going back to tropes, like,
I mean, that's just a haunted house story.
Right. But like you said, like, this is like a training wheels for reading haunted house stories.
Right. Well, even myself, like, I read these books, I love them. And then once I got to the point where I felt like I was getting tired of them and I outgrew them, I moved on to like more mature horror. And then from there to like just other books. So it was kind of like the boost into reading that it was supposed to be.
Right. I mean, people always say like he's like a training bra for Stephen King.
Yeah. I've never heard anybody say it quite like that. But
apparently he said that to Stephen King. Like, people say that I'm a training bra for you.
Stephen King was probably like, I've never heard anyone say that.
Apparently Stephen King was like, ah, God, I really wish you were not mentioned in the same sentence.
What's funny about that, though, is that I went from reading Goosebumps to reading Stephen King.
Well, why not? Why the hell not?
He does, I guess. You could see that he fancies himself as like the Stephen King for kids.
Oh, yeah.
Even look, in like the personality, the persona he puts
think
on.
About how much money Orl Stein must have.
Yeah. I think that like during the 80s and 90s, there was like this persona that you should have, that you felt like you should have had if you were a horror writer. So I remember like Stephen King used to put on a persona that he doesn't have anymore either.
Well, he would appear in trailers for his movies and stuff.
Yeah. And also I remember like interviews
fueled
with him.
By pure cocaine.
Yeah, he was just really
he also used to have cross eyes that he doesn't have anymore.
Corrective surgery, I guess. I remember in the 90s I watched an interview with him where he was like, I write on a computer and there's a stuffed bat that's on my computer.
No, it's a rat.
Screen or rat or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, if it all felt very like, ooh, he's creepy and this is his ritual.
Well,
but
think about, they were celebrity writers.
Now he's just like a normal, like New Englander old man.
And during the Trump years,
he's very political.
He was quite a tweeter.
Yeah. And a great tweeter.
Well, apparently his house does have like bats on its,
I mean, sure.
gate.
But he's not like this scary man of mystery that I think he like pretended to be.
Did you ever see the trailer to Maximum Overdrive?
No.
He's like, you know, for years, he's just vibrating with cocaine. And he's like, for years, people have been trying to turn my stories into movies. Well, if you want to get something done right, you got to do it yourself.
Now presenting the worst adaptation of anything. The worst adaptation of anything I've ever written.
It just fucking makes no sense.
Is that the worst Stephen King adaptation you think?
Oh, no. I mean,
God, there's so many.
Well, are we talking about adaptation? Because I would say The Tommyknockers, but that's also an awful book. Even he says that's a pretty awful book.
I mean, God, some of his books he doesn't even remember writing.
Right.
Cujo, he says he has no memory of writing Cujo. He said that if you would. That's so funny, parallel. Cujo, the kid dies in the book.
Right.
And he has said that if he were sober and he were to write it again, he would have never killed the kid.
Really? But
yeah.
The kid dying is the crux of like Pet Sematary.
Yeah, but the kid in Cujo is like the like main character.
Right.
And then at the end he dies. And then in the movie they have him survive and
he's
that's
Jonathan.
Because Stephen King wanted him to live in the movie version.
Yeah. It's
Yeah, I didn't see. Did you see the new Pet Sematary?
No one did.
It's like the twist was that the girl dies. It's like it was so stupid.
You know, there was like a period from like 2010 to 2006 where they remade a lot of shit that I don't even remember. Like there was a new Poltergeist. Who fucks saw it? There was a new My Bloody Valentine. Like just they were
I
just
forgot
pumping
there
out
was
shit.
A new Poltergeist.
Right.
Did you see? Side note: the trailer for that piece of shit. I Know What You Did Last Summer series.
No.
That's coming out. It looks so bad.
Do you know, I just read that Lois Duncan hates that movie.
Yeah.
Because there's no murder in her story.
Yeah.
And her daughter was murdered in real life.
Yes. And her killer was just apprehended like a month ago.
Crazy. Anyway, what the hell are we talking about? Let's get back to...
Speaking of reading as a kid, I read that book as a kid and I was like, why isn't anybody dying in the I Know What You Did Last Summer book?
Right. Going back to Bressane, R.L. Stine has said, again, in multiple interviews, that his like idol was Rod Serling.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, says a lot because he doesn't think of these books as like, this is a novel, this is a book. I think he thinks of Goosebumps in general as like my anthology series.
Right.
Because they're throwaways to him. He doesn't, it's just plot. He doesn't care about character. It's just like, here's this story. And what he's doing in the Goosebumps show is clearly doing a Rod Serling thing.
But what's so interesting about that is, like, if he's such a huge fan of The Twilight Zone and he sees himself as, like,
and it's
a
so
Rod
allegorical.
Serling. And The Twilight Zone is so allegorical, and yet his whole thing is like, oh, it's just plot.
I don't know. Well, again... How can you cut through the shit that he said? You also have to think during the heyday, even into now, he would go to schools and like do like Q&As with little kids. So he's got a persona and a well rehearsed like battery of anecdotes and stuff like that and jokes he's told over and over again.
Yeah,
you'd also tell like by the way they characterize Jack Black in the Goosebumps movie, like the persona he wants to be, like. In that movie, R.L. Stine is like a loner man who lives in a creepy old house.
Yeah.
Not like a married guy who lives in the Upper West Side in an apartment.
Is R.L. Stine a New Yorker? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a New Yorker.
Huh. I never knew that.
Yeah. And he has one daughter or one kid. So.
Woof, 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 woof. You sent me that meme, right?
Yeah.
With the dog.
Woof, 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 woof.
Put it down.
By the way, did it bother you that they kept saying moving cartons instead of moving boxes? They kept saying cartons. Open the carton. There's a lot of cartons. Who calls them cartons?
I don't know why. Maybe I'm confusing it with Are You Afraid of the Dark? But I chalk that up to like Canadianness, which is why I'm shocked to learn that he's a New Yorker. I always, for some reason, thought that like Goosebumps was like a Canadian import.
Maybe the show was.
I feel like. I mean, a simple Google search could solve this one, but...
Yeah, but who's got the time for that?
I mean, I'm just going to offend every Canadian. It's got a Canadian quality to it, you know?
Yeah. No, me and Jen watched some of season one of Are You Afraid of the Dark, and we were shocked at how...
Canadian
is, like literally everybody has that accent. It's so Canadian. Clearly, like, it's Canada so clearly... And, like, as kids, you have no idea.
It's like that Nick Kroll sketch.
No, yeah. Wheels, Ontario?
Wheels, Ontario.
No,
you filled
really
up
like
my auto with pasta. I'm sorry that I filled up your auto with pasta.
So I read a version of this book in the Goosebumps Classic series, which came out in 2005. There's a few changes. There's a few just like grammatical changes and word choice.
Simplified grammar, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I noticed.
But also, they update... When they find like all of their new friends' graves and they realize all their friends are dead, they update the dates because they're supposed to be newly dead kids. So like right. It'll be like 2004 they died. Which so they updated the dates from like what 90, 91 or whatever. Yeah.
I just love newly dead kids newly is a dead phrase that really kids. Tickled me. That's gonna be the name of my band.
Did any of it scare you?
No.
Nothing in it gave you any kind of a
goosebump?
Yeah.
I mean, no. Well, I mean, well, that ending was, I was like, oh, cool. But no, nothing was scary.
When they are in the house, they run in the house and I forget how it's revealed, but they realize the little girl is in their living room. Like they're looking out the window and they're like, where's mom and dad? And the girl's, girl's like, they're not here. And like, I genuinely was like, oh, shit. I genuinely was like, oh, God.
I mean,
gave me a startle.
Yeah.
It gave me a start. Oh, wait. Here's a line that I've been thinking about all day.
Okay.
When Mr. Dawes is dragging them to the amphitheater to kill them, he says, it doesn't hurt to die.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That was a line that I highlighted as well.
But again, it's like the girl saying thank you. I think R.L. Stine thinks, oh, we don't want the kids to... we don't want to threaten the kids with violence, so we'll say that, not knowing that it makes it 10,000 times creepier. It makes it so much scarier. Creepier.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that. Why does he say that? It does
because
sound...
Because he's trying to, like, talk her into
so
it.
So menacing.
He's trying to talk her into, like, just go ahead with this. Come
and
on.
And it seems to sort of come out of nowhere.
Doesn't hurt to die.
Because I feel like it probably does.
I recently rewatched the incredible movie Return of the Living Dead.
Okay.
There's a scene in that movie where they actually get one of the zombies who's like, she's missing her legs, so she's just a torso and arms. And she's a really cool puppet. And they tie her down to a like a gurney because they're in a mortuary, something like that. And they talk in that movie, the zombies. And they're like, what do you want? And she's like, brains. And they're like, why do you want brains? And she goes, it makes the pain go away.
Oh, God, that just hit me really hard.
And they're like, yeah. And she delivers the line in a really creepy way. And it's like that's what it made me think of. Like, death hurts.
But why do brains make the pain go away?
I don't know. But it's funny. Both ideas are scary to me. The idea that death don't hurt and the idea that death does hurt.
Yeah, he says, come with me. It's time for you to join them. His smile grew wider. Amanda, it doesn't hurt to die, he said softly, almost soothingly.
Ooh.
But then, see, it's confusing. But then why then does Karen say thank you?
Yeah.
Unless, maybe she's unless sick of being each a kid. One has their own personality. Like, maybe some of them want the release.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that is a good line. It doesn't hurt to die. And the fact that he says it with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mr. Dawes.
You know, just think of it as like a short story.
Yeah,
it's not terrible.
No.
I mean, it's clearly for kids, you know? So as and reading it for the first time as an adult, I was just kind of like, all right, you know.
I could see like getting into this with my kids.
Well, they're so, like you were saying about grandma reading it, they're so freaking fast. I mean, they're 62. You could probably bang that out in a good month.
Yeah.
And then be like, I read all the Goosebumps.
I feel like you'd just be so, your brain would just be fried after.
I tried to read all of the Series of Unfortunate Events. Mm-hmm. And I read three in like 3 days. And okay. I was just like, these are the, it's I can't because each one is the exact same thing. We're in a new situation. Here's a guy who's going to help us. Oh, wait, that's all off.
Right.
Run
right,
away right. again.
Hot take, that's how I feel about Harry Potter, and that's why I've never finished that series.
Whoa!
As
I see Harry Potter on your shelf right there.
I mean, they're good, but I've read all but the last one, because every time I read one, I'm like, oh, this is good, and then when I go to start another one, I'm like, I can't take more of this right now.
Mm-hmm. You know who's a big fan of J.K. Rowling? Dave Chappelle.
Gosh.
Happy Halloween!
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed. I think that's all the notes I have.
J.K. Rowling. Oh, my God. What a turn.
I know. So going back to the series, how many do you think you read as a kid?
God, out of the 62? Realistically, I probably read like 20. I bought more than I actually read.
Sure.
I probably had like more than half of the series, but I think I read probably about 20 of them. Yeah. I know I read, so just thinking back, the ones that I remember reading, It Came from the Basement, It Came from Beneath the Sink. That was the first one I read. I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. It Came from Beneath the Sink, which was about like a sponge, like a monster sponge that lived under the sink. Then there was, I think, Don't Go in the Basement. I read that. I read like all the Night of the Living Dummies. I read all of the Haunted Mass. I remember I read Say Cheese and Die, which was very similar to a Twilight Zone episode about a camera. Mm-hmm. Where, like, you took a camera and it showed people dying or something. I read something with trolls. I read a bunch of them. They all kind of blend together in my memory. And I read them all from like 1995 to 1996. So sure. Like and all right in a row.
Sure.
They're probably still in the attic of mom and dad's house.
Oh, probably.
In a box.
You know, I think...
In a carton.
Young kids... fuck, not even young kids. Everyone, even me as a grown man. You feel a little bit of pride finishing a book, right? You know, even though I'm 38 years old, I still, when I finish a book, I'm a little bit like, yeah,
I did that.
Yeah. Let me go on Goodreads and prove it to the world. So I bet that is part of it too, you know, like, oh, I've got so many, how many Goosebumps have you read? I've read this many, you know, again, it's all confidence building. Right.
I remember one summer I was like, I'm going to be the kid to read all the books over the summer and get the prize when we get back.
Yeah.
And I remember that no one gave a single shit.
Did you win books. The prize?
I don't even think there was a prize.
There's no prize.
I was lied to. I remember bringing it on the first day of school being like, look how many books I read. And the teacher being cool. Like, great. That's awesome, Anthony.
Cool. Anyway.
Have a seat and shut the fuck up.
You go sit in the nerd section. do you remember what your favorite Goosebump would be?
My favorite, I think, was The Haunted Mask. Either The Haunted Mask or Night of the Living Dummy. I remember the first Night of the Living Dummy has a really unexpected twist at the end where, like, the whole thing, you think it's one dummy, and then at the end it turns out it was the other dummy that you thought was the innocent dummy.
Whoa.
Was the bad one.
Is that the one where that's why he wrote the second one? Because I know
he talks
about one book had an unhappy ending and they were like, you got to write a sequel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's like, if I'm remembering correctly, I think like Slappy was like his puppet that was good, and then bad things started happening and they blamed it on the other puppet. But then at the end you find out that it was Slappy the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the big twist. I remember also there were hardback collections of Goosebumps. Mm-hmm. Where it was like Night of the Living Dummy 1 through 4 all in one volume. Nice. And it was hardcover.
Nice.
By Scholastic. But I read, I don't know the details of it, that R.L. Stine and Scholastic don't have a good relationship anymore.
Is that true?
I don't know why. So that's interesting. But I remember, you know, we did a whole episode on Scholastic book sales, book fairs. And
go
that
back
was like
up
a
the
staple.
Feet, Scholastic book fairs.
Yeah, that was like a staple of the Scholastic book fair.
Absolutely. Goosebumps was all about
Goosebumps. It was like, for little kids, it was Clifford. For big kids, it was Goosebumps.
Right.
In the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about it. Like, why wasn't I into it? Just because you were into it? Just because I was a dick?
No, I think you were just like a little too old for it.
Yeah, and I think also I didn't know as a child that I had debilitating anxiety. So it wasn't until I was an adult that, like, because I didn't become a prolific reader until I got on medication and I was like, oh, I could sit now. Oh, do you know that people don't just vibrate their whole lives and could like have a thought? So I think as a kid, I probably didn't realize, like, you know, I'd probably read a page and then be like, wah, 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 and run around and put the book up my ass, you know, where you, I guess, didn't have that problem and you could sit and read. Because I love the idea of books. I used to buy books and hold them.
Yeah.
Look at my book.
Yeah.
But I could never read them.
Yeah. I don't know. It's also like a little bit of a personality development thing too. Like, I'm like thinking back, it's like I was the youngest of three and it was like, okay, this is going to be my personality. I'm the bookish one. And I guess, you know, God, that's probably why I am who I am and why I teach English, and like all of it stems from this.
Oh boy. So you really have to thank R.L. Stine for your whole life.
I should. But it's weird the ways that like the seeds of your like identity are planted when you're like really young.
Yeah. No, I mean, they say like siblings when they're split up, turn out to be more similar than if they actually were raised together.
Well, yeah, because you want to be your own self.
Right. Right, right, right.
And it's like you want to, especially when you're, I mean, you're a middle child, but especially the youngest. Like, I had two older brothers and they both had their own personalities. And I was like, well, what's my thing going to be?
Yeah. Well, this is my first Goosebumps.
First and last.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we did it. This was a good Halloween. Oh, what a Halloween.
What a Halloween it's been.
I'm always a little sad when it's over. It's the best time around here at PCMC. it's really our time to shine.
Yeah, but then, I mean, as much as I love Halloween, once Halloween's over, then it's like, okay, now we're into the holiday season.
Right.
We're gearing up for Thanksgiving. Nice Christmas special. And then, yeah, and then Christmas, which is my favorite holiday.
I get it.
Because I'm a normie.
Ugh. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for being here. And
thank you for having me.
Talking about Goosebumps. Is that how that goes?
It didn't go quite like that, no.
All right. Well, I'm Mike Bongiorno. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. This is a fucking podcast.
About this is a fucking podcast.
Pop culture ephemera. Like and subscribe to the show. We are available everywhere, even in Facebook. You know Facebook publishes podcasts now?
No.
We're available on the Facebook now. Literally, you can listen to us fucking anywhere. All right. This was Halloween 2021.
Is this the last
episode? This is the last episode of Halloween.
Wow.
Until next year. But we'll be back next week in a non-spooky way.
When spooky season is over.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.